Thanks for the
reminder.
No problem. You're going to help me about 80 times in this, I think. So
I'm trying to multitask here with three different things going on. So
great. So hello, everybody. Welcome to the VINA Groundwater Sustainability Agency Board meeting of November 18th, 2020. This is happening online via Zoom. This meeting is being conducted via teleconference in accordance with Executive Order N-25-20 and N-29-20. Members of the public may virtually attend the meeting remotely using the Zoom platform. By the way, I'm Evan Tuschinski. I'm vice chair of the board, filling in for Chair Ann Schwab today. The public may listen to and or participate in the VINA Groundwater Sustainability Agency board meetings via landline or mobile telephone or via computer with both audio and video enabled or audio only. If you wish to comment on an item, but do not wish to participate during the meeting, the public may submit comments prior to the meeting via email to vinagsapublic.comments@chicoca.gov. Please submit emails with the subject line, public comment item number, and with the appropriate item number. The public is encouraged not to send more than one email item more than one email per item or comment on numerous items in one email. With that, I will call the meeting to order. And the next item is the roll call.
Okay, I will do the roll call. So we have board member Rower.
Present.
Okay, board member Cooper.
Present.
Board member Lambert.
Here.
And then Vice Chair Tuschinski.
Here.
And then Ann Schwab is absent.
Great. We will move on to the consent agenda. All matters listed under the consent agenda are to be considered routine and enacted by one motion. Item 2.1 is approval of the 10-14-20 VINA GSA board meeting minutes. Item 2.2 is approval of the VINA GSA monthly financial status report. Item 2.3 is approval of revisions to the VINA GSA Stakeholder Advisory Committee Charter. Do any of the board members wish to pull any of the items?
Yeah, this is Jeff Royer. I'd like to move 2.3 to item 3.
Okay, we'll move item 2.3 to item 3. Are there any other items that wish to be removed? Are there any public comments on this particular item?
I do not see any.
Okay. Do any board members have any comments on item 2.1 or 2.2?
I move to approve.
Great. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Great. Thank you, Board Member Cooper. I think we do a roll call vote. Is that correct?
Yes, we can do that for the people on audio only. So Board Member Rower.
Aye.
Board Member Cooper.
Aye.
Board Member Lambert.
Aye.
And Vice Chair Tuschinski.
Aye.
So okay. Items 2.1 and 2.2 passed.
Great. We'll move to item 2.3. That's approval of revisions to the VINA GSA Stakeholder Advisory Committee Charter. Board Member Royer asked for that to be pulled. So I'll allow him to, or invite him to please discuss.
Thank you, Chairman Tuschinski. A couple questions on here, or things I think we should probably discuss really briefly. There's a section here that isn't being changed. There is a requirement that's been added for there to be a quorum of SHAC members present when making internal decisions and recommendations. That's a change that's in here. What's not being changed is there's a section saying SHAC members may also be removed from the committee at such time they no longer meet the membership requirements or for failure to attend three consecutive meetings unless there are extenuating circumstances as determined by the GSA board. So with them wanting to have a quorum present, my understanding is of the 10 members, we've got a domestic well user that has missed, I think, the last four meetings. And I went and looked at the minutes. It looks like he's only attended three of the eight meetings over the course of the year. So I guess my procedural question here is, if somebody is missing three meetings and we've got a group that wants to have a quorum requirement as part of their charter, what is the actual trigger mechanism? Because we're down a domestic well seat and we're already having enough trouble reaching out and making sure that we're reaching our constituents during the COVID restrictions. Being down a domestic well user, I think, is problematic, particularly as we head into the project management discussion phase. So I guess, Paul, my question would be directed to you. When we have a requirement that somebody be removed after not being at meetings or missing three successive meetings, have you been able to reach Josh Pierce? Has he given any indications to what's going on? And if there isn't a extenuating circumstance, is this an automatic trigger or is this something that has to be agendized and moved on?
Yeah. Typically we've reached out to him. There really hasn't been a good explanation. So he missed the last meeting. So that was 4. Typically what's done in these circumstances, it would be agendized, but it's almost a formality to bring it to the board to remove the member. So we were going to discuss that under the SHAC update, with that circumstance that will be brought at the December meeting, and Kelly can explain more. Our intent is to also start soliciting potential candidates for the domestic seat. So ideally you'd have candidates at the December meeting after the removal of the member, and a replacement could be chosen at that point.
Oh, perfect. So we could actually do both at December. If I just wanted to make sure that we weren't log jammed all the way to the middle of January, considering the importance of everything around with the shack.
Yeah, and we'll check the procedures as long as the removal's done first to create the vacancy in Queen. We can have candidates, because that was discussed at the shack. There was a lot of interest to make sure we do have the seats filled. So I think we're pretty confident we can find some candidates for consideration at the December meeting. But I think back to your point on quorum, if somebody does miss three successive meetings, which triggers removal, it's not automatic. They're still sort of on the books as a filled seat. So that's why we want to move and resolve this.
Perfect. Those are my only concerns, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Sure. Any other board members have anything to comment or question on this item? Hearing none, are there any, and there were no comments from the public and none have arisen since this was pulled onto a new agenda item?
Correct.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion on item 2.3, which is moved to item 3.
So moved.
Move to approve, is that your motion?
Yes.
Great, thank you. So that's from Director Royer.
Lambert will second.
Great, Lambert seconds. Again, are we gonna conduct a roll call vote for all of these, Linda?
Yeah, sure, because of the audio only members. Okay. So we have Board Member Lambert.
Aye.
Board Member Cooper.
Aye.
Board Member Rauer.
Aye.
And Vice Chair Tuschinski.
Aye.
Thank you.
So that passes 4-0. We next go to business from the floor. Members of the public may address the board at this time on any matter not already listed on the agenda. Comments are limited to 3 minutes. The board cannot take any action at this meeting on requests made under this section of the agenda. Linda, do we have any comments from the floor? Any people wishing to speak? You have muted yourself, so.
I keep missing it. I do not see a hand up, nor are there any emails in the email box, the general email box.
Great. Since there are no noticed public hearings, we'll skip to items. Oh, I'm sorry, Deborah Lucero is waving her hand. Forgive me, I see her hand is up now. So if we could, we'll skip back and business from the floor, Deborah Lucero, as soon as she gets unmuted. Maybe okay. I have the power to do that. Oh, somebody did, great.
All right. Yeah, I do have my blue hand up. Is there another way we're supposed to weigh in?
No, I think it just we have a few people trying to look for those things, and you just got missed. So I'm sorry about that.
Okay. I'm just wondering what the process is.
You're perfect.
I was actually going to bring up the Shack dilemma of the domestic well user position not being filled for the last four meetings, and they are going into some really important things. So I was just wondering if a timeline could be established by the VINA GSA board to make sure that that position gets filled as soon as possible, because the next decisions are going to be pretty important. And I wondered like what the process was. And so I just am bringing it up because it sounds like Paul is going to address that. You know, how do people apply, et cetera, et cetera. You know, how much time does it take to advertise that? And that's all I really had to say. So I was grateful Jeff brought it up, but thank you.
Wonderful. And there'll be another opportunity. Item 7.1, there'll be a Shack report, and Kelly might bring it up. And if not, if you don't hear it to your satisfaction addressed, then please feel free to comment again when item 7.1 okay. comes around. And then okay. perhaps we can get a little more clarification then for you. And then it's an item that we can act on. As you know.
All right. Sure. Yes. Thank you.
Absolutely. Okay. So I appreciate that. And we're going to now move to item 6.1, consideration of a cooperation agreement with the Rock Creek Reclamation District. And I'm guessing this is Paul?
Yes. Thank you, Vice Chair Chesinski, board members. So what I have before you today is the cooperation agreement with the Rock Creek Reclamation District Groundwater Sustainability Agency and the VINA GSA. This agreement was drafted in its form last spring through some changes to the Rock Creek Board. They hadn't been able to consider this until their meeting that they held last week and approved it. And what it is we have two groundwater sustainability agencies in the VINA subbasin. Through the entire process, there's been a commitment among the GSAs, when there were four of us in VINA, that we did want to work towards one groundwater sustainability plan. And that's been a consistent position among all the agencies from the beginning. And so it was a matter of how do we get there? And there was a variety of options to make this process more efficient and to ensure that we have one groundwater sustainability plan. So we had been negotiating amongst the four member agencies, City of Chico, Durham Irrigation District, Butte County, and Rock Creek for over 18 months to try to look at a joint powers agreement, which the three member agencies did ultimately agree to. Rock Creek, towards the end, decided they wanted to remain as an independent groundwater sustainability agency. But still kept their commitment that they wanted to work with the VINA GSA on a single plan. So what we crafted was a cooperation agreement. It's modeled after the cooperation agreement that we entered into with in the Butte Subbasin, where there's 11 different independent groundwater sustainability agencies. But it's built on that. And really the primary purpose is just a intent commitment that both agencies are going to work together, communicate, and establish some structures on working on one plan. At the heart of it, and we've been, until this agreement's been done, we've been trying to work under the spirit of that by bringing in Rock Creek into planning discussions with the consultants as we go through workshops and other planning process related to the GSP. And then moreover, as we start getting into discussions with stakeholders on the plan through management areas, the county would be working with Rock Creek for the North VINA management area in those discussions with stakeholders and coordinate how we do outreach with stakeholders and the like. So there's a commitment of staffing, points of contact. So this is recommended for approval. It'll set the stage just to document the commitment of both agencies to work together towards one plan. It'll be a piece that we'll have to submit in as part of the GSP to demonstrate that we're putting in one plan together. There's no obligation. If somehow this isn't working, either agency can pull out at any time. So it's pretty flexible. We did have Rock Creek right now does not have a general manager, but in the interim, they designated two of their board members to be liaisons with the VINA GSA. We had a Rock Creek board member attend the stakeholder advisory committee meeting. And I think one may be on at the meeting today. So with that, I'll open up to any questions you may have about the agreement. And Valerie is on the call too, and she had reviewed it along with Rock Creek's council when this was done. So if there's any questions, you can let us know.
Great. I'll open up to questions from board members. Any board members have questions? As usual, I have a couple questions because it wouldn't be me if I didn't. First of all, I saw that the effective date on there is for tomorrow. Did Rock Creek Board already approve this agreement, or do they have a meeting coming up tomorrow, or was that boilerplate?
They did approve it last week, and that was my error because I filled in the blank space on effective date and I meant to put today's date. So good catch, Vice Chair Tuzinski. We'll change that to the 18th.
Okay, wonderful, good. And
24-hour lag period, so.
Yeah, no problem. I just wanted to make sure. And then the other question is about the composition of our representation in this joint effort. It could have members of the governing body or the management team. Is that something that we need to designate as a GSA board, or is that something that we'll determine as appropriate as we go along?
That was put in on the suggestion of Rock Creek. We were in setting up that joint management committee. It was intended that it would be our management committee, the staff you have, who are going to do that interaction, almost bringing them into the circle of our management committee. The issue they had with a board member was they only have one general manager, and their board at the time was very involved. So they wanted it to not just have staff, but also to have board members. So that's why that was in there.
Okay. Great, thank you. Are there any public comments about this? Either that were written in, or I'm looking, scanning my screen and don't see any hands. Linda, do you see anything or have anything?
I do not, and I did scan up and down too. So if I miss somebody, I apologize, but I've done it twice. So I don't see anybody, so. Thank nor you. Are there any emails.
Okay. Then I'll open it back up to board members for any discussion or motions. Ooh, it's like a library.
I'll move the recommendation, Lambert.
Great. So board member Lambert moves to accept the agreement.
So Jeff Royer, I'll second.
Okay, board member Royer second. I'll have Linda conduct a roll call vote. Oh, she's silent.
Keep hitting it, it doesn't work, sorry about that. Board member Lambert?
Hi, there we go, same thing, hi.
Board member Rohrer?
Aye.
Board member Cooper?
Aye.
And Vice Chair Tuzinski?
Aye. So that passes unanimously or nothing. Great. And we will move to item 6.2. That's an update on the development of the VINA Groundwater Sustainability Plan. And that will be a presentation from Paul Gosselin, who is muted, but I think getting himself ready.
Yes, and I'm attempting to share a screen, which I hope worked.
Yep, it's right up.
Aha.
Cool map.
Getting the map. So yeah, this is, what I'm going to do is give an update again on the schedule of the GSP development. There's a lot going to be happening, particularly in the next 6 to 8 months. A real brief overview of sustainable management criteria. Christina Buck gave a more detailed presentation at the Stakeholder Advisory Committee meeting. And also just a brief overview of project and management actions and the requirements and the schedule, and a bit on the interbasin coordination effort that's going on. So as you can see, this is the map of VINA. The yellow is the VINA GSA area and our partner Rock Creek Reclamation District GSA. So again, the slide is very redundant. You've seen this before. These are the sections we're working on. Administrative sections are being drafted largely by staff and some consultant help. Basin setting work has been drafted with comments. So that's nice. That's been kind of set. Sustainable management criteria is the next big topic that's going to be covered, and I'm going to give a little brief overview of that. Monitoring networks, a lot of this work has been done, these sections, but the big key one is representative monitoring sites. And I'll speak about that because it's tied directly into sustainable management criteria in project and management actions. So really where we're at is, you know, targeting to get the groundwater sustainability plan. And I like calling it version one. There's a lot of concern about how well constructed, how complete this plan's gonna be in. And there are gonna be gaps. There are gonna be things, additional information we want. There's gonna be things, some uncertainties and things we're gonna have to follow up. And that's consistent with all the plans that have gone in. And it really starts the process when you submit it, to start really doing not just your implementation for sustainability, but starting to strive better understanding of the basin, removing some of the uncertainties and data gaps. So really looking at this, it is gonna be version one. It's gonna be the starting point of a long workload that lies ahead. And we're looking at about a year from now, the board's gonna be considering holding hearings for adoption of the plan in November, December. And I'll get to that schedule. So the basin setting chapter is drafted. Groundwater dependent ecosystem work through a work group has been drafted and submitted off to the consultant team to take a look at. So between now and June, roughly 8 months, these are the main chapters we'll be looking on. There's the administrative ones and some other information that needs to be put in, but really the driver is going to be sustainable management criteria, representative monitoring network, interbasin coordination, projects and management actions, and implementation cost and funding options. And this is something we haven't spoken about, but one of the criteria in the plan has to be a description about all those things you put in there. How are you going to get them done? What's your funding mechanism to get them done? And really what they're looking at, they want to bring some, you know, a reality check about, you know, are you actually, do you have the horses to pull the wagon to get your plan done that you have? So that'll be an important item we'll have to address. So December and January will be, the board will be getting reports from the Stakeholder Advisory Committee. They're starting initial discussions on potential project and management actions. They had initial overview of sustainable management criteria. They're going to have a more in-depth discussion in December. Interbasin coordination is going to be a process we'll be working through June or July or so with adjoining subbasins, and I'll speak about that as part of this presentation, and representative monitoring sites. And as we provide the information to the board, and as things start to frame themselves up, we'll be looking too for board direction. If there's things that you want to direct us towards to report back, that will be part of the agenda till we actually get some formal recommendations up from the Stakeholder Advisory Committee. So in February, we're slated to present out to the public the Sustainable Management Criteria draft document for a 30-day comment period. As you remember, we had the basin setting document out for a 30-day comment period, not, even though not required in the Act, but it's something that is a good practice. We're going to put these draft documents out for a 30-day public comment period. But we also wanted to, this is something, direction from the board, we were talking about having a public workshop, but also coupling that with a board meeting. So the thought was that your February board meeting, we would have one topic and it would be in a workshop format to go over the Sustainable Management Criteria draft document. It'll be another venue for providing board direction, but also for public input. So besides the 30-day comment period, a GSA board workshop would be slated for the February meeting. And then we're looking at the monitoring network draft document in March for a 30-day comment period. And then April, May, and this comes from the schedule that the Stakeholder Advisory Committee has, is some of the draft sections will have recommendations coming from the SHAC to the board on sustainable management criteria, project management actions, including costs and funding options, the representative monitoring network, data gaps, and interbasin coordination. So the exact schedule when these recommendations come up and these chapters, we're not too sure. This is sort of the window we're targeting to make sure we stay on track. So in June, we are going to slate to have the project management action draft document out for a 30-day comment period. Even though we've had some earlier discussions on project and management actions, we do need to have the sustainable management criteria process catch up and get a little ahead, because that's going to define where you want to go, and the project management actions will be the means to get there. And then interbasin coordination report. And then July, we're going to be compiling the entirety of the plan at that point. And that's going to go out, and a portion of it, the implementation chapter, about taking a look at all those things that we're slated to do, how we're going to get it done, either through grants or through fees or through some other mechanism. And that will go off for a 30-day comment period. So, you know, come August, we'll have the complete compiled draft VINA GSP slated for a 60-day comment period in September. I should note there is a requirement in the GSP regulations that the land use agencies should be afforded a 60-day comment period. So we're just going to broaden that to a general 60-day comment period for everybody. But we're going to be and have had consultations with the land use agencies prior to that. So we're going to keep those communications early throughout this entire process. And then November, December, we'll be back to your venue to consider the adoption of the plan for submission in January 30th. And then really this may seem like a lot of the work's been done, but this is just the beginning of the work about implementation. So we'll start on that journey at that point in January. So again, this busy slide on all of the sections, I'm gonna just give a brief overview of the sustainable management criteria, sustainability goal, undesirable results, minimum thresholds, measurable objective, all new sort of strange terms that were incorporated into the Act. Christina Buck gave a much more detailed presentation at the Stakeholder Advisory Committee. Her presentation is posted on their page if you want to take a look at it. So really what the sustainability goal is, it's a brief narrative about what your goal is for the basin and how, you know, what you're going to do to avoid undesirable results from the six sustainability indicators. and what you're going to do to reach that sustainability level. So really, the simplicity of it is, if there's no undesirable results occurring and the basin's operating within a sustainable yield, then the sustainability goal is being achieved. I should note, one of the struggles in getting the act drafted was how to define sustainability. And so that was a big struggle about what what should the law say about what sustainability should be. And the solution was to define what we don't want to have occur, thus getting to sustainability. And I'll speak to that in a bit. So really, sustainable groundwater management is when you're managing and using groundwater and avoiding undesirable results from sustainability indicators. And they're on the right-hand side. Those are the six undesirable results. I X'd out seawater intrusion. We don't have to deal with that one, being far from the ocean, so we can knock that off. So we're going to be focused in on five. So really, the undesirable results is lowering groundwater levels and significant and unreasonable reductions in groundwater storage, saltwater intrusion. Again, we don't have to deal with degradation of water quality, land subsidence, and surface water depletion interconnected streams. And significant and unreasonable is a management call that the board's going to have to make about whether any of the impacts are significant and unreasonable. That's something the state doesn't determine. That's something you will do through your public outreach, your full complement of exploring the data and impacts, and making those decisions about what's significant and unreasonable. I just want to preface that there was a lot of concern that the state was going to tell us how to be sustainable, and that's well within the local purview. Again, so, you know, who are we trying and to protect? And in the act, there's a list of beneficial uses and users of groundwater. So each one of these you do need to take a look at when, and this comes from basin setting, about where the basin looks to be. And it really is other undesirable results to any of these entities. So we do need to look at the different wells, whether it's a domestic well, shallow well, ag well, municipal water supplies, environmental uses, refuges, groundwater dependent ecosystems. All of those need to be evaluated, whether they're having undesirable results. And the intent is to have the basin be managed in a way that these those who rely on groundwater are not going to be impacted. So one of the terms that came up, and that was one of the terms, undesirable results, that was a term put into the act. The other is minimum threshold. So when you do your analysis and you start taking a look at basin conditions, whether it's groundwater levels or storage or stream depletion, and you're looking at where your undesirable results is to, let's say, exit groundwater dependent ecosystem or domestic wells, you're going to set a level, a minimum level below which you're going to have an undesirable result. So it's that threshold where you're going to start having significant and unreasonable impacts. And that's a quantifiable level that you would set. And you need to describe what those impacts are and what the factors and causes. And then from there, you don't, because things, year to year, things change. We have wet years, dry years, different things will happen. So you want to build in some protection for where you set your, manage your basin to avoid undesirable results, your minimum threshold. So you want to set your measurable objective, and that's where you want to get to be sustainable in the basin. And what you want to do is to have it reasonably above your minimum threshold and have an operational level through wet and dry years and other circumstances that you're operating within an acceptable level, but you're not going to get close to your minimum threshold. And where you set that measurable objective from your minimum threshold is going to be dependent on the basin itself, because the variability, you know, in each basin is different. So it's going to be reflective of basin conditions. And for us, it might be slightly different in the different management areas, given the undesirable results and the groundwater uses we have. So this slide has been commonly used. I have another version of it. This was for critically overdrafted basins with the date 2040. But you can see that where the minimum threshold is when Sigma went into place and when the plan went into place. And this was their implementation over time to reach their measurable objective. So sustainable management criteria, measurable objectives, it's where you want the quantitative target, where you want sustainability, but within 20 years. You can go earlier, but you have 20 years to reach where you want to be. You want the flexibility. And over time, you need to, when you put your plan in, you just can't say, here's where we want to be in 20 years, and you know, we'll check in with the state in 20 years and tell them how we did. We have to report every 5 years, in addition to the annual report, but every 5 years, we need to set interim milestones on where we expect to be along that path towards achieving our measurable objectives. And that needs to be reported into the state as sort of a performance measure. And all of these, depending upon how you react to your interim milestones, if you meet it, that's great. If you're not meeting it for a variety of circumstances, you need to modify your plan to stay on track and report that. Otherwise, if you just coast and don't do this, this could be another trigger point for state intervention. So it really is besides the plan you put in, it has to be enforceable and accountable. So as part of that, the accountability is representative monitoring sites. And this will be a subset of the monitoring network that we have. And what the state's looking at least one or more wells will be tied as performance indicators for one or more of your sustainability indicators. So you might have choose one or more of your wells in an area, and these are MA's management areas, let's say for groundwater elevation. And you're dealing with protecting domestic wells and some others and groundwater dependent ecosystems. And there might be a good representative monitoring well that would be the indicator to see if we're doing sort of all our planning efforts, we should be at a certain level in 5 years based upon this well. Similarly, you might have a different well for stream depletion. It might be something closer to the stream. So that's an effort that needs to be done. So it's going to be very quantifiable as to whether you're achieving your intended interim measures. And again, this is a little bit more detailed slide of the last one. It's taken from the best management practice from DWR. Very similar, you get down to your IM is your interim measures. And this one, it does bounce around a little bit year to year, but as you can see, they're on track with their measurable objective, the star out at 2040, which ours will be 2042. Is where you want to get to. So those benchmarks, interim measures need to be reported into the state. So before I jump to project management actions, that was a quick flyover of sustainable management criteria. A lot of new terms, but really it's setting the benchmark of where we want the basin to be in 20 years to avoid undesirable results, to groundwater uses and users, to for the long haul. And it's really where you want the basin to be to reach sustainability levels. So project and management actions is the means to get there. So you can set your basin to avoid these things, but you're going to need to develop actions and plans to get there. And generally, it's going to involve one or two things, either reducing the demand out of the basin, or improving recharge into the basin. So it is a required element, as I said, and it has to be tied directly into the measurable objectives established in the VINA GSP. So there is specific criteria that is in the regulations for project management actions. And these are the things is we bring potential project management actions to the board for potential inclusion into the plan. This is the type of information that has to be included. There has to be a timetable for when the project is going to be initiated. It doesn't have to be initiated in 2022. It could be planned and initiated in 5 years from now or 6 years from now and completed, you know, in another 5 or 10 years. It's still within the 20-year window. And then tying into the benefits, where and how those benefits will be evaluated. Is there monitoring associated? How is the accounting for this is going to be reported out? Is it in one management area or is it basin wide? Those kind of considerations. An explanation, real brief explanation about how it's going to be accomplished. You know, is it, you know, a regulatory control or is it going to have to be some engineering project or the like? And what legal authority is to carry it out. So if it's the VINA GSA, we would reference what authorities the VINA GSA has. There may be a project sponsor out there and they may have authority over different aspects. And it might be a water purveyor who might wanna put in conservation programs or some other things. And they have the legal authority to do that. Big kicker is how much is this gonna cost? And it also has to tie it into what's the means of funding that project. And that'll be a lot of discussion that the stakeholder advisory committee and the board will be on the cost benefit of some of the projects, you know, what you're going to get in return for sustainability and what those projects may cost. And ultimately, again, they have to lead to meeting the measurable objective. And interim milestones on that pathway towards your minimum objectives. There's also consideration, some of these, if they're not, you know, shovel ready or things that are in the works, they wanna know, you know, when and how it's gonna be implemented and what would trigger termination. I think we have to be real about some of these projects that if they may not come to fruition or there may be some uncertainties to them and you need to fess up and you know, be honest about what it would take, what sort of circumstances would take to terminate it. And that might tie into regulatory and permitting issues. There may be some uncertainties whether permits and regulatory processes may be impediments to having it achieved and those need to be lined out pretty well. So as DWR reviewing this, it's real full disclosure about what you're doing to get towards where you want to be, but also for up through the stakeholder advisory committee and the board, real transparency on the realism on what we're going to do to achieve our sustainability. And then there's other considerations. We've been having these discussions with the VINA stakeholder advisory committee. It's just, you know, consistency with the VINA plan. Multi-benefits, another big topic. Some of these projects could have multi-purpose benefits. Let's say, you know, protect groundwater elevations or stream depletion, but also have some environmental benefits also. Public acceptance, absolutely, you know, the plan and how to get there has to reflect the community values and what the community wants. This is where the public's really going to weigh in on their preference on where to go in the public benefit and no harm to others. And as we start talking through the stakeholder with the stakeholder advisory committee, there'll be other issues that they're going to bring up to the board as considerations for this. So the initial SHAC discussions we've again been having. Preliminary discussions, overview through Consensus Building Institute. They've been facilitating those discussions. And the meeting before last, they had a brainstorming exercise where everyone just put out their ideas in a online format with sticky notes. We can't meet, so it was kind of a pretty cool tool for people to just throw any idea out there. And they were kind of raw. There wasn't much behind it, but it was a good good assortment of projects to consider. And then we started to have some discussions on preference, just taking their temperature check on some of the concepts, not a recommendation, but just trying to focus in on discussions on where they fit. The last meeting we had, there was more interest on wanting to frame some of the considerations of some of the projects. And this might tie into some recommendations that might ultimately come up on some controls and ordinances the Vina GSA board may put in place to, let's say, avoid concerns that someone may do a project that may be detrimental to groundwater sustainability, or people may lose certain rights of water. And there are mechanisms as we go through discussions with the Shack to prevent that from happening through controls that the Vina GSA board has. So this is just the real beginning discussion. Like I said, they're gonna be picking up the next meeting, sustainable management criteria discussion. But as we discussed project management actions, we reviewed some other plans that had some project management actions. There was a couple that had a good approach. One was to set a matrix up that included a lot more projects than what they were going to initially plan to do. And, you know, part of that is since some projects may not achieve the level of benefit to the basin than others, you want some others in your pocket to be able to pull out as you go through your interim measures to employ as a contingency, or others may not happen either through funding or some other mechanism. So you want some buffer to be able to pull out to ensure you meet your targets for sustainability. So there'll be some potential projects, and they might be projects that might have some uncertainty to it, might need a little bit more fleshing out, but they're good projects that the board may want to include. And then there might be some conceptual ones that have a lot less information, but they're worth including and worth exploring over time. So it really would give you a suite of options besides your primary ones. And these are just a real rough example of the type of matrix. And as you go across the type of projects that may be in place, and as you go off to the right, you're looking at cost, timetable, regulatory process, the amount of acre foot benefit to the basin, either through demand reduction, and whether it's a plan, potential, or concept. So this is the type of matrix we're going to try to flesh out. Each one of these projects will have probably a couple page summary sheet to reflect all these items. So it won't be full blown feasibility studies or totally fleshed out. They'll be, unless they already have them, they need to just cover these topics as best as possible. So with that, I'll open it up. Any questions on project and management actions?
Are there any questions from the board about the presentation?
Okay, I'll move on to interbasin coordination. And this is a real important in Northern Sac Valley. As you know, the water doesn't stick to political boundaries or basin boundaries or any of that. It's very interconnected. So we knew going into this that interbasin coordination was going to be very important. There's actually a provision in the Act that states that one GSA's plan cannot impede, and I'm paraphrasing, an adjoining sub-basin from achieving their goal. So it really fosters some coordination across boundary lines. And we had taken a look at that back in 2017 and had done a project funded through the California Water Foundation to look at interbasin groundwater flow. And that was a report that included basically 10 sub-basins from the Sutter Buttes to Red Bluff, bounded by the mountain ranges, around 10 of them. And really what it came up with was really start early in the process of GSP development at the technical level to make sure that as you start developing the plan, the technical pieces are evaluated so that if there are differences in approaches, those can be resolved or at least understood from the early onset before you get to your management decisions that are built upon the foundation of your technical pieces. And then as you build up and start getting into management decisions, it would make that process go a lot smoother. So we were fortunate to have as part of our technical support services provided by DWR through Proposition 1 of the Consensus Building Institute, as one of their tasks was to do a interbasin coordination, and they're facilitating these discussions with us in adjoining subbasins. And these are the key subbasins we're going to be interacting with through the facilitator. So again, these are the initial ones: Antelope, Bowman, up in Tehama County, Butte, Colusa over in Colusa County, Corning, Los Molinos, Red Bluff, Vina, and Wyandotte Creek subbasins. So I borrowed the slide from Mariana Rivera Torres from Consensus Building Institute. So yeah, this is not too surprising. There's adjoining subbasins that have groundwater interaction. What the facilitators brought up is there's an optional interbasin agreement that you can do between adjoining subbasins. It's not required. If you were doing two plans within the same subbasin, you would have to have an intrabasin agreement, and that is required, but they put into the regulations an optional one. And there's a framework of the types of things that would be in that agreement that fit with the process we're going through on identifying the technical areas and the management criteria and the like. So as a framing document, the interbasin agreement is being used to frame the discussion. There was discussions among early discussions about managers whether we intend to ultimately have an optional interbasin agreement, and I think the jury's out on that. I think generally, if things work out and things aren't too different, and when we're not having any conflict, I think generally it's the feeling is we don't need extra agreements if there's none necessary. So this is not something hopefully we're going to force if it's not needed, but it's out there as an option. Consultants are starting to compile some of the basic information, and this is all going to be done publicly up through, and we'll report to you and the Stakeholder Advisory Committee as materials get compiled. I should make a note, we do have a page on interbasin coordination through the Butte County webpage, our department's webpage on SGMA. But these are the types of initial information we have on the subbasins we're initially looking at. So the consultants are going to do general coordination. We're in the process of starting to compile the technical information on which models different subbasins are going to be using, what their groundwater flow looks like, what their conceptual model looks like. And there's a pretty extensive technical piece that's being compiled and should be compiled by the end of the month. And then some conflict resolution. If there's huge disagreements and intractable agreements, there could be some conflict resolution to avoid kicking major disagreements to DWR and having them sort it out, which I don't think would prefer. And then ultimately whether there's a voluntary agreement that's necessary from that conflict resolution process. So currently there's gonna be more information coming in December. We started with the managers. A lot of us had this effort as a task in our grant. And so we wanted to just pull the managers together to say, okay, what approach and what task do we have before we start doing some things, let's say some additional modeling or others, to coordinate it so we're not duplicating efforts and we can use our funds in the most productive way. So right now we're we did that over the summer, just checking in with the GSA managers who's managing the grants. Technical coordination, we're in the midst of that now. And so the, as I said, the information on the technical pieces is being compiled. We should have that information out sometime next month. And then that will really go back to basin setting work, what where they're at on how they approach basin setting. We're kind of in the midstream of that. Some have got a little bit ahead of us. We're in draft form. Some have just started their basin setting work. So this is going to be some missing pieces in this. But ultimately, as we go through the discussions on sustainable management criteria, project management actions, there'll be that continued collaboration and interaction. So Consensus Building Institute, they're facilitating this. They're going to compile the information, modeling cross-boundary flows, stream aquifer interaction by the end of the month. And then we're going to start, and that'll be made public. We'll have public discussions on this to the stakeholder advisory committee, and then begin the process from there. So it's a real good process. It's highly technical at this point, but they put together a very good plan. It's something that, although required in the law, just looking at other plans, not too many people have taken it on to the extent that we are. And I think that's going to serve us well to do things very thoroughly, because this is very critical. And I think the more we understand what our neighbors are doing and make sure that they're not going to impact us and we're not going to impact them, and we all reach sustainability, it'll be better for the entire region. So that's an overview of some of the components of the groundwater sustainability plan that we have coming up and the schedule. So I'll open up to any questions.
Do any members of the board have any questions about the interbasin cooperation portion of the presentation? Hearing none, I'll open up to comments or questions from the public about the entire presentation, because we didn't ask for comments or questions for the first part. Linda, do you see any hands or have any emails? You are muted, just for reference.
Yeah, I was doing a check it twice kind of thing. So
perfect.
I do not see any hands raised, nor are there any emails.
Great. Well, this was just an informational part. So if unless there's any final comments from anyone on the board, we will move on to section 7, communications and reports. We'll start with 7.1, the VINA GSA Management Committee updates. 7.1.1, the VINA Stakeholder Advisory Committee update from Kelly Peterson. I know she was with us audio before.
Great. Sorry about there that. Can you hear me okay now?
Yeah, now I hear you perfectly. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Good evening to everyone that's in attendance here. Real quickly, I just wanted to provide a quick overview. The transmittal for this item really just goes through the bullets of what the SHAC really dove into during their October meeting. And as you can see, we've added a new piece to this, which is including the draft meeting notes of that. So it provides more detail that you can see. At the time when the packet comes out, these are still in draft form. However, the SHAC met yesterday for their November meeting and approved these, so that's some new information there. At that SHAC meeting yesterday, as Paul was talking about the sustainable management criteria discussions continued along, and also the PMA projects and management actions continued the brainstorming, like he mentioned. And that summary, you'll see more detail with when you see our December packet coming out. So stay tuned for that. So one thing that we talked about today too, and I wanted to quickly address that, is this potential SHAC vacancy. that will be coming to the board to make a decision on at the December meeting, and that's due to a lack of attendance of more than three meetings. So we just passed a charter today, and if we can just go back and take a look at that, that does the one of the purposes of that was really to kind of outline the processes for appointments to these seats, et cetera. But one of the there's a couple of requirements to fill that seat. One thing is they can't these potential members can't be serving on the GSA board. They have to live or work in the Vina subbasin or represent an organization with a presence in the Vina subbasin. So those are the kind of hard and fast requirements for that. And it does state that an application is required. So initially, the board, you know, went through a process for this initial appointments, but as it says in subsequent years, applications will be submitted for the vacant seats. So in lieu of the discussions that we've had today and the great deal of work coming and the requirement to have a quorum for a lot of the decisions, you know, I think that at the December meeting, we can structure the agenda for the board to be able to consider those appointments at that time if they feel that they've got information in front of them from qualified applicants. Applications are currently, that application is online. It's on the Vina GSA website. Those are always accepted for vacant positions. So assuming that, you know, in anticipation of a vacant seat, those applications will be accepted at any time. I think what we'll do too on our end is send out notice of a potential vacancy through our email list and also through our department's newsletter. So thinking through this, you know, we do have timelines in place for, you know, getting items together for the packet in terms of being able to get those distributed out to you guys in time. So, you know, if we receive applications, say, by the 2nd of December, which is not too far around the corner, you know, those can be included in the packet. However, there's nothing to say that any potential applicants couldn't submit an application up to the date of the meeting and, you know, verify some of those requirements verbally to the board at that time, too. So, I guess given that, just a reminder, the next meeting is on December 9th of the board as well, too. So with that, I'll open it up and see if there's any other questions or any other discussion about it.
I'll apologize for any background noise. It's feeding time for the dogs in our household. Are there any questions from the board about this item and the discussion about replacing a board, a SHAC member at the next meeting? I'd just like to, because we have Valerie Kincaid on board, and even though she doesn't drive, she just visually commutes in. It's always nice to get her input. Does the process that we describe sound like we're going to be in okay footing for replacing and appointing at the same meeting?
Yes, thank you. This is Valerie Kincaid. It does look like it. Obviously, the language of removal is May, so it's not automatic. It does not mean that if you miss three meetings, you're automatically off the SHAC. The GSA board does need to take action. So if that's how the board wishes to move forward, it should be agendized as an action item. I would suggest making the action item of removal of SHAC members first and then appointment second. But I think if you did it in that order, the board would be on good footing.
Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you. I'll open up for any comments from the public. Oh, I'm sorry, Steve, you unmuted. Would you like to say something? Nope, I guess it was just an unmuting. Linda, are there any comments from the public? Okay, Seeing none, I don't think we need any direction on this one because we already kind of discussed what we were going to be doing. So I think we will move on to 7.1.2, update on the DWR Technical Support Services Facilitation Services with Consensus Building Institute. This is from Paul Gosselin. He spoke a little bit about this and he's going to elaborate a little more.
Yeah, as I mentioned last meeting, the task order from DWR for facilitation services runs on a calendar year, so it expires the end of December. So they're open for renewing the services. So we have a request in for them to do that. And so I haven't heard back. I don't anticipate there'll be a problem. But just, I think everyone can recognize we would be in a world of hurt if we didn't have Tanya and Mariana to help guide us through a lot of the process they're doing. So I should have positive things to report at the December meeting.
Great. Are there any questions from the board about this item? Any questions or comments from the public?
No.
Great. Mr. Chairman? And,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry, quick question for you, Paul. Do we have any, do we have a status? I didn't know where to ask this. This seems like the closest related spot. Any status on our extension request to the governor's office?
Oh, yeah, I forgot to put that on. We have not heard back. And like I said, the Board of Supervisors is the Butte County GSA sent a letter and also as a member agency, to Governor Newsom asking for an extension. So I have not heard back. I expect some response from the administration at some point, but no word yet.
Okay, thank you. Excellent presentation, by the way. I really appreciate it. It was nice to see everything laid out as a roadmap.
Thank you so much. We'll now go to 7.1.3, which is a Tuscan Water District update, again from Paul Gosselin.
And there's nothing to report because there's no application from LAFCO.
Oh, sorry, so that means there's no application into LAFCO or there's just no progress?
No, no completed application as reported by LAFCO. So we're waiting for LAFCO to say, we have a complete application, here's what it is, and get us your comments.
Great, now I understand. Perfect, thank you. Well, that completes the items on the agenda. So we will adjourn to the next regular Vina GSA board meeting on December 9th. Thanks everybody for their attendance.
Thank you.
Thank you. Linda?
Thank you.
Linda, just a quick question for you. Are you anticipating that Ann is going to be able to sign the agreement? Did she communicate with